Brahma Karma Samadhina. That's the first half of it. It says, this ritual of doing this is part of that which lies behind the illusion, which is called Brahma. The food which is being offered is part of the illusion, is part of that which lies behind the illusion, is part of Brahma. He who is offering the food is part of that which lies behind the illusion, is part of Brahma. The fire, the hunger to which the food is being offered, is part of the illusion. It is part of what's behind the illusion. It is part of Brahma. He who realizes that all form is part of the formless, all karma is Brahma, becomes one with Brahma. Discrimination, the technique of discrimination. Is he a bus driver or is he God being a bus driver? What do you look at when you look at another person's eyes? Are you looking at them with lust? Are you looking at them as subject-object? Can I make it with you, baby? Will you love me enough? Is it subject-object, or are we one being just looking into the mirror of ourselves? I mean, just try looking directly into people's eyes all the time. It's a very, without power. See, it's a very interesting thing. Because almost everybody in the West that looks into your eyes has a power game going. Look how much I love you. Look how much I love you. I'm really here. I want you to know. I'm going to control you. Look deep into my eyes. You are getting sleepy. Eyes also happen to be the windows of the soul. I look into my eyes, other people, my eyes, wherever, whoever's head, body they're in, just like I look at the candle flame. The same thing, I'm looking at light. That's all I'm seeing. I look directly into a person's eyes, and they, you should see what I go through when I look into people's eyes. See, people come to see me, and they come and they sit down on a mat opposite me, and I sit there and I do my mantra and I look into their eyes. And just like I look into the candle flame, exactly the same thing. There they are, and I'm just looking at them. Just hanging out with their with a light. And they go through this business. Boy, I've got... Oh, I'll tell you, I've been trying to do sadhana, but I... And you watch, it's beautiful what happens. A person comes in, first their head does all this stuff, see? They're like looking at this and that and all around, you know, and depending on how neurotic they start out. And then you're just sitting there, just like a big glass of water, just being there, see? And pretty soon they get down so that it's just their eyes that are doing this thing, see? And their eyes are going like boom, 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 boom. And you're watching it, it's with disbelief. I mean, it's just like, all this. Then their eyes get down to like this very fast flicker. It's like a rat when it gets close to the goal gradient. You know, it's near the shock box and the food at the same time, and it keeps running back and forth right near the edge. And its eyes are just going like that. Wow, dig that. It's a long way into this place, isn't it? You don't threaten, you don't ask, there's no power game, you're not trying to win them over, you don't want to seduce them. Desires create your universe. I don't have any desire. I just happen to be here. And here we are. We just happen to be here. That's all there is. That undercuts all paranoia. Do you understand what purity is? Purity is desirelessness. Total and absolute desirelessness. That's what complete purity is. And when you look at another person with desirelessness and you are really here and now, that is total love. That is total love. Because it is no longer a subject-object relationship. I will be just as much here as you can be. And if you can be all the way here, there is just here. There's no you and there's no me. There's just here. And if I am very quiet inside, and the mantra's going very calmly, and I'm just looking, what I see extraordinarily, I see these, like clouds, I see veils, between my eyes and the other person's eyes. And what do I say to myself when I see the veil? I don't say, oh, he's holding back, or she doesn't trust me. I know that the veil takes two to dance. And it is my impurity that's creating that veil. The only place you ever have to work is on yourself. If you want to change your universe, you change yourself. That's the secret of the game. We teach by being. We teach by being. All you can get from me is my state of being, and you can hear where I'm hung up, and you can hear where I'm not hung up, and you can feel the light, and you can feel the darkness. And that's what you walk away from here with, not all the words. We teach by being. It's a vibrational communication. And as high as my vibrations are, that's what is going to resonate in you. And that's what you're going to walk away having the faith strengthened in, that place in you. And if you can look in me and see that it's possible through a place in you that feels alive, that's the message. That's the transmission. And if I were totally pure, if I were finished with my son, if I were an enlightened being, I could sit here and in take you all right to here and now, just by my presence, because I would be an absolutely pure mirror, and there would be nowhere you could hang any of your paranoia. No hooks. But you've got to be that pure. You've got to be that pure. And pure means no subject object. Extraordinary experience to work to be in that place. All the time. All the time. Try it on the bus. Try it anywhere. First, it's scary because it's so open. And you say, I'm so vulnerable. Who? Who's vulnerable? Vulnerability is part of the drama. Who you are isn't vulnerable. I mean, you look at somebody with total love and they look at you like they want to wipe you out. Like, what do you want of me? What are you, a dirty old man? Your impurity. It's not them, it's you. Just go in on yourself and be more pure. Because you're still saying, look how much I love you. See? There's still an I and a you. Finally, you're just standing in the bus, you're perfectly mindless. Just being here, being love. And everybody you see just feels that feeling. It's just like the sun came out of heaven and got onto the Third Avenue bus and is standing holding on to the strap. And everybody that looks gets warm. They feel warmth and light. You're not coming and saying, look, I'm the sun. Hey, baby, you want to get warm? Hang out with me. No, there's no come on. There's no come on. You see, the only way I could really do this, if I were a high being, is really, I've got to tell you, is where I'm totally indifferent to its effect. As the Bhagavad Gita says, do your work, but don't be attached to the fruits of your efforts. Set thy heart upon thy work, but never on its reward. Work not for a reward, but never cease to do thy work. Do thy work in peace, free from selfish desires. Be not moved in success or in failure. Evenness of mind is yoga, a peace that is ever the same. Work done for a reward is much lower than work done in the yoga of wisdom. Go beyond what is well done and what is not well done. Go thou therefore to wisdom. Yoga is wisdom in work. If I am caring about whether you can hear what I'm saying, then I am caught in the drama. And it's only if I can do this with total non-attachment that you can hear anything. So complicated and yet so simple once you see the way the game is played. What non-attachment is. So complicated yet so simple. Simplification of life, consecrating one's acts, quieting one's mind, finding a quiet place from which to view the passing drama. Reducing the amount of stimulation that imposes on you and that keeps you agitated. All of these are part of the work. Surrounding yourself with the minds of beings who are doing the work and who have already finished. Once you understand what the game is, this is all there is to do. I was on the bus coming up and I was sitting next to a couple and somebody else came along that knew them and they said, "Where are you going?" They said, "We're going to a party." I thought of the concept of party. But do you realize I have been in New York for 3 weeks, I have not gone to a party, I have not hung out, I have not gone to a pot scene, I have not listened to rock and roll music, I haven't gone to the opera, I haven't gone to art studios. What's happening to me? Man, I went to one bookstore to look at holy books. My God, that isn't me. What's happening? You have to give it all up to have it all. You've got to move back from it. It's not even suffering. There's no suffering. I'm quite content to just sit and be calm because it's all deepening inside. It's going so much deeper. I mean, all of that almost sounds sacrilegious to you when I say, I don't crave to go to a museum. What happened to your culture? Art is beautiful. Have you been to the Living Theater? Did you go to the light show? You've been down to the Village to that new... Have you read the... Did you look on the other night on TV? Have you tried that new... You mean you're not interested? Did you read in Time last... You mean you don't? I mean, when you realize that Eisenhower is dead, what's that? Who's where? Oh man, you're too nutty for me. You're not living in the real world. You're not living in the real world. Whew. Wow. Boy, how far out the play is getting. I mean, the actors are trying to convince the audience. You see how far out that is? Wow. Oh, Monday, Pedney, boy, compassion. That's all I can experience is compassion. Sure. I still get on the bus. I come here. I do the gig. I go home. I eat. I sleep. I go to the toilet. I go to bed. I do just things like real people do. Huh. the water going under the bridge. Wow, look at that. Whew. Pass it through. Pass it through. That's karma yoga. That's karma yoga. That's karma yoga. And after you've done that for a while, you watch your own desires create your universe with absolute awe. Absolute awe. You wait until you have watched your own sexual desires at work. Amazing how they work. Amazing. Watch your own paranoia. But just watch it. Don't get into an evaluative thing. Oh, you got a superego still. Oh, I'm bad for having that. Watch that one too. Wait until you watch your superego. Wow, that's a gas. Sits around evaluating everything. Don't confuse the evaluator with the witness. Two different beings. See, like I'm supposed to eat rice and dal and milk and honey, but I love root beer, see? So suddenly there I am drinking root beer. And I say, oh, damn you, you're drinking root beer. You'll never get ahead. Never get ahead. It's all so poignant. There he is drinking root beer. There he is putting himself down for drinking root beer. How poignant it all is. How poignant. Lusting again. I mean, you know you're not supposed to be walking down the street looking at that girl's legs. I mean, what kind of a thing is that for a sadhu, a renunciate, to be looking at that girl's legs? And thinking those thoughts, oh man, where are you at? You're going under. You'll never make it. God, I got to get out of New York City quick. For hell and damnation is this is Babylon. Terrible. How poignant. How poignant. The terrible beauty of nature is all where it's at. That's the where it's at. People come and say, do I have to give up sex like you've done? Well, if you ask it that way, the answer is no, man. You couldn't even if you wanted to. Because what you give up is you give up the attachment, not the sex. You've got to understand the distinction. It has nothing to do with sexual act. It has to do with desire. And if you sit in your room not having sex all day, it's the same trip. You might just as well be making it. I'm not going to drink root beer. I am not going to drink root beer. Today I will not drink root beer. I'm going to have a good meditation. I'm not drinking root beer. I'm not drinking root beer. Who am I kidding? I certainly look good, don't I? I really look like I'm having a good meditation. No root beer. 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 Maybe no physical root beer, but plenty of attachment. Attachment's the key. Watch your own attachment. Only when you develop the ability to stay in that place inside yourself which watches it all, as it's happening, does it start to fall away. That's the you that sees it all. It sees the judge, it sees the actor, it sees the desirer, and it sees how the desire creates the universe. Watch it all. That's karma yoga. We end these evenings with bhajan. Bhajan is the singing of songs in the praise of God It's also a highly, another way of saying it, it's a highly sophisticated method of getting your mind calmed down by a repetition technique of a very simple repetitive phrase that keeps you identifying and thinking about higher process, higher beings, the light within. Tonight, we will be singing to Ram. And it is said, Ram is the incarnation of God, and it is said, place the name of Ram as a jeweled lamp at the door of your lips, and there will be light both inside and out. It's also said, free from sensual passions and absorbed in devout affection to Rama, the soul disports itself like a fish in the ambrosial lake of his beloved name. Isn't that a gasp? I mean, this is where it's at if you can really, like, just go the trip, you know. Free from sensual passions and absorbed in devout affection to Rama, the soul disports itself like a fish in the ambrosial lake of his beloved name. Following the singing of bhajan, which ends when it ends, there is silence both on this floor and the one below until you're out on the street. The going out on the street and the staying here, when you go anytime from this moment on, is determined by the harmony of the universe in which you at this moment are dwelling. Your internal mechanisms, your head, and all the forces acting upon you. But if you can keep in mind the hollow bamboo, if you can keep in mind the place where one sees the actors on the stage, you will see the actor go down the stairs, go out the door, go home, live its life. You will see it from an eternal place. And as you dwell in that place of the pure witness, I and my Father are one, said Jesus. When you dwell in that place, you get so calm, you live as a flame that never flickers. There is a place in you that is total contentment, that is total serenity, that is peace. And as soon as you can extricate yourself from all of the lures of your senses and the lures of your thought, just watch it all with total compassion and understand it's all part of the divine, the lila rasa, the divine play. All of it. All of it. Then you are liberated. It's a very real place, the only real place. In India, when people part or meet, no matter who they are, what rank, social role, whatever the game is, they try to remind each other, although they usually forget why they're doing it. They try to remind each other that they're really not the players on the stage at all by saying to each other, I honor that which is God within you. I honor, they call it the Atman in the Hindu scriptures, the place inside where you are light. And they say the word is namaste, namaste or namaskar, but namaste in the place I live. So that since we will not be speaking after the bhajan, I say to the light that is each of you, if you but only allow it to be, namaste. Namaste. The words are Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri means honorable, J means hail, and J also means victorious. It's Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram are the only words. At the temple I lived at, when it was consecrated, the townspeople took turns in groups on 24-hour vigil for 1 year solid, being at the temple singing Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. That's all. You can get very high on it. Very high. There are many, many hundreds of melodies for it. I'll give you one, the simple one to work with. Don't sing it like you're singing in a social sense. It's not a social game at all. Let it happen inside of you. If it doesn't happen, don't sing. That's cool. Listen to it inside. Be it. Be it. Just be the bhajan. There are no points. No points. No points. Just let it all happen inside. Ram is the... He sits on the sun throne. He lives in your heart. He is absolute purity. He is total love, total light. He is your very self, if you but allow yourself to dwell within the cave in your hridayam, in your spiritual heart. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. 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 Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai.
Ram, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai 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 Ram, Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, Shri 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 Ram, Jai Ram, 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 Jai Jai Ram,
Jai Ram, Jai Ram.
Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri 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 Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri 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 Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram.
Can feel that letter. He's moving in and out of the levels just as he's writing it. Just as he's writing, he's describing these different levels. Now, when you go from physical to astral to causal, you are still with the subtlest desires, the desires for pure idea, pure idea. Thought creates matter. Mind creates matter. The causal plane is the world of ideas that creates the universe. Right at the top of the causal plane is where we call what we call Godhead. The Godhead. It's the first place into the universe of form. It's the first world of form. It's the place where God created the universe. His mind, his thought manifested into the universe. His thought manifested into all the lower levels of the causal plane, all of the astral plane, and all of the physical plane. His thought manifested into all of that. And when you go back and back and back and back, you go to that place where you become one with the Godhead. You are God at that point. You are the idea that lies behind the universe. You literally are it. You're not making believe you're it, you are it. And the funny thing is, you're still not finished. And as far as a Buddhist is concerned, you haven't even begun the trip. You're still hung up in form. Because he says, baby, it's all illusion, no matter how groovy it gets. I mean, this physical plane's obviously illusion, all a dream. Then you go to bed at night, and you go to sleep, and then you dream. Now, you notice about your dreams, they're very real, and yet they don't have any physical form. That's the astral plane. You're dreaming in the astral plane. And then when you get to the point of just pure ideas, sometimes when you're a very high physicist, or very poets you've seen, they touch just pure idea. Sometimes art, or a vase, or something gets so essency, you feel you are touching God by being in connection with that piece of art, because it's pure idea. It's the idea of vaseness, if you will, that place. It's causal, causal plane. A mind at the causal plane created the vase. Created the vase. But then you go finally through the final door, and you go from the form into the formless, into the void, into the beyond the beyond. The Tibetan mantra is gate gate para gate para samgate bodhi swaha. O wisdom which has gone beyond, beyond the beyond, to thee homage. When you have crossed the ocean of sanskara, the ocean of illusion, the ocean of desire, the ocean of attachment, you can call it whatever you will, it's all the same ocean. When you have crossed through all the form, you enter into the state of formlessness. It is eternally quiet. It's eternally quiet. It never was, never was. Push far enough towards the void, hold fast enough to quietness, and of the 10,000 things, none but can be worked on by you. I have beheld them, whither they go back. See all things, howsoever they flourish, return to the roots from which they grew. This return to the root is called quietness. Quietness is called submission to fate. What has submitted to fate becomes part of the always so. To know the always so is to be illumined. Not to know it means to go blindly to disaster, says Lao Tzu in the Book of Tao. To go, you've got to go the whole trip, all the way back, before you get to the place where you see that behind all of this, there is all of this in its own, in its unmanifest form, always, eternally. that nothing's really happening at all. Nothing's really happening at all. Nothing ever happened. Nothing's ever going to happen. There's nothing you got to do. There's no doer to do it anyway. It's the grand illusion, and all of the groovy trips in astrology and the astral plane and occult powers and all the groovy trips of mind and all the groovy trips of God concepts and ideas and creations and all that, it's all stuff. Beautiful, exquisite. I mean, oh, wow. Because at every level it's the same trip, that the cell and the microcosm and the macrocosm and the macrocosm that's the macrocosm of that, including that microcosm, they're all the same, repeated over and over again. There are certain laws that you understand when you're in the Godhead. You see how the whole system works. You see about action and reaction. You see a lot of the laws that man, in his highest moments, has touched. He's touched. Just like when Einstein touches, you can see that he broke through. You understand when a man breaks through. And Einstein was a pure being, and that's how he touched it. He got beyond ego. He got into the world of pure ideas. He got to the Godhead. He saw how it was in that one little place. He went through right down the middle, right down the middle. And then, when you have gone all the way out, like Buddha, when he sat under the Bodhi tree, and he went beyond all the desire and all the attachment that kept him no matter, kept him being God even. I mean, it's groovy to be God. You know, if you've just been a little child or been pushed around or been just, you know, a taxpayer, wow, not only can you play Nixon, I mean, don't settle for being president, be God. And then when you've used up all those desires, then you're ready to go through the door. Now, the game is that Buddha sat, and he sat there for 7 days, and he said, well, shall I just hang out here, you know, or shall I come back? And there are many beings that don't, they just finished. They're not on assignment. Because they're really finished. See, many of us have gone through every one of those doors. I've been through every one of those doors. I have been into the void. Yet here I am, sitting here in form, thinking in form, seeing in form, most of the time being at the lowest level. Because my desires brought me down. They brought me back all the time. I was not free of attachments, and I had to keep coming back to the level the attachments kept me at. But if you have purified and finished with attachments, that's what renunciation means. You've finished with attachments. It doesn't mean anything about what you do in the world. It has to do with your inner being. If you've gone the whole trip, then you get into the void, and you're in the void, and you are eternally, eternally in the still, quiet ocean where the lights of mother and son merge as one. It's all one. It never was and never will be. Then Buddha saw, I mean, he had a vision, and the vision said from the astral plane or causal plane, said, sent him on assignment in effect, said, there are many beings whose veil is very thin and you can come back and teach them. And that's the bodhisattva role. Because you finally understand that though it is all illusion, it never was and never will be, at every level at which you exist, you are part of everybody else. So as long as anybody's hung up, you're still hung up. Because it's all one being, really. That's the bodhisattva problem. Till everybody makes it, nobody makes it. So what happens is you go all the way out and then you come back. He who clings to the void and neglects compassion. Now what does the word compassion now mean? Compassion only means a true empathic understanding of how it all is, which you can only understand when you've been in the void. I mean, if somebody comes into me and they bring me their heavy burden of their karmic trip, oh, I'm suffering so, and it's so rough, and I listen to it, and I love them, and I empathize with them, and I feel the sympathy, And at the same moment that I'm doing that, I realize that they don't exist, I don't exist, the problem doesn't exist, none of us ever were, nothing's happening, there's nobody doing anything to anybody. Right? That's compassion. And at the same moment, I'm there and saying, yeah, right, I dig how it is. Compassion is being conscious at all levels. That's what compassion is. Understanding how it all is everywhere, all the time. He who clings to the void and neglects compassion does not reach the highest stage, but he who practices only compassion does not gain release from the toils of existence. He, however, who is strong in practice of both remains neither in samskara, sanskara, samsara, nor in nirvana. He neither remains in the void nor in the world. The final place that the game leads to is where you live fully consciously in all of it which is in nothing. You are eternal. You have finished perishing. There's no fear of death because you see it's just a transformation in an illusion. And yet, seeing all that, you still chop wood and carry water. Do you understand that? You still do your thing. You flow in harmony with the universe. You are beyond morality, and yet you're a totally moral being, because that's the harmony of the universe. You see that to do anything with attachment is only creating more desire, which is creating more desire, which is creating more desire, which is keeping you in the game longer and longer and longer, keeping you in the illusion. And once you see through that, it can't help but fall away. What are you going to do? You get all caught up like, I think I'll become famous. Wow. Boy, am I going to become famous. And you're already laughing at yourself. Wow, man. Am I going to go on that trip? Who am I kidding? All right, here I am. I'm famous. Wow, look at that. I'm famous. Boy. Okay, that's that. Now what? I'm going to become rich. You ever hang out with really rich people? Busy being rich. And finally, the day comes when they say, yeah, right, I'm rich. So that was what that was about. Then they're getting ready, perhaps, to go through the eye of the needle. Until then, not a chance of a snowball in hell.